Welcome to our fourth episode of Growing In, an Advent podcast. Today we are talking about growing in love. I'm so glad you've continued on this journey with us throughout the season of Advent. I'm Amanda Atkin. I'm the Minister of Spiritual Formation here at Greystone Baptist Church. And today I'm talking with Pastor Chrissy Tatum Williamson. Pastor Chrissy is the pastor of Greystone, and she also does other amazing, wonderful things. Chrissy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, you didn't tell me you were going to ask that.
Well, you now have
asked.
Well,
here we are. So I'm Chrissy. Amanda's already told you what I do vocationally. In all the other spare time that I have, hang out with my daughter, who's six, my dog, who is, I think, 20 months now, and my spouse. I don't know. We like to hang out around Lake Lynn. Visit playgrounds, I bake bread, embark on the occasional sewing project, you know, anything to keep myself busy. Justin doesn't believe that I ever sit down, and I think he's kind of right.
You do have a lot of projects.
I do.
So as you think about Christmas is almost here, what do you love about Christmas?
Oh, I love the opportunity to hand make gifts. I know some people hate that, but that's
one of my
favorite things.
Why would we hate that?
Because there's this idea that handmade presents are kind of like a cop-out they're cheap. But all of those are false because of the time that you have to put in it. And craft supplies are really expensive. So to make, for example, to make dresses, I like to make my daughter's Christmas dress. So to make a dress costs probably twice as much than it would cost me to just go to the store and buy it. But there's some joy. I'm thinking about different Advent themes. There's some joy in handing over something that I have put time and energy and thought into. And one thing that I've found in the last couple of years is that just taking a pause to make something, whether it's bread or pesto or curtains or a Christmas dress, I usually pause and think about the people for whom I'm making whatever it is. So if I'm making a dress, I'm praying for the person who will wear it. If I'm making bread, I'm praying for those who will eat it. And that's become a really rich and fun spiritual process for me.
I think as you started mentioning the word pause, and I look at this Sunday, this week's Bible lesson, this lectionary text, it's about the pause that Joseph had to make. We're in the first chapter of Matthew. Joseph has been confronted with a shift to his whole entire reality. The way that he was laying out his future, all of that has come to a knee-jerk stop. And Joseph is having to take a pause to consider what his next best steps are. And God gives Joseph a dream. I don't know why Joseph didn't get an angel, but Joseph got a dream. Joseph gets a dream that asks him to step out in love, a risk, something that he had to be very courageous about, but a pause to consider what a loving response to this entire situation would be. And I'm so thankful for that pause.
Absolutely. And, you know, it strikes me sitting here thinking about it today, the word bridezilla comes to mind. Oh. Not that Joseph was the bride, but you know, if anyone's ever gotten sucked into those television series where they follow people in the days and months leading up to the wedding, it gets super intense right before the wedding. And so as I'm reading the text today, I'm thinking about Joseph, who is probably in full-on bridezilla mode. I mean, the day is coming. This thing is about to become real. And all of a sudden, Mary is expecting a child, and it's not his.
And didn't he have to pay a dowry? Like, paid for this.
I wonder if he wanted his money back.
He's paid for all of this, and now it's falling apart.
I know. And the thing, you know, even as you described it a moment ago, I circled it in the text here on my page, where God appears to Joseph in a dream. And, you know, in hindsight, for us to think, to read this, we're like, oh yeah, well, of course, you know, Joseph had that dream. So, you know, obviously he's going to believe that everything's going to turn out okay.
But do you believe your dreams?
Yeah, no.
No.
Usually not.
I don't remember most of my dreams, right?
Yeah. Well, it's probably good because they're probably crazy.
That's true.
And I wonder if Joseph thought that when he woke up, right? And so I just imagine this guy in the ancient Near East living his life, doing everything he's supposed to do, when all of a sudden a dream interrupts and nothing is what he thought it would be. So to continue to move forward, considering his wife, considering what would become of her if he did not stay the course, even though it was incredibly difficult, speaks to Joseph's integrity and speaks to his amount of courage, which I'm not sure that many of us would have based on a dream.
Right.
And right. I think most importantly, to get to our topic of the day, speaks of Joseph's love, right? Love that's willing to take a risk, that's willing to be vulnerable and open itself up to criticism from those who are not receiving dreams.
And it's a different, it's not a Valentine's Day kind of love.
No.
It's a Christmas love. And that's what I so appreciate about the season of Advent and the fact that we give an entire Sunday over to love. Because most of the time we talk about love in February and it's about candy and it's about cards and it's about a date night out with your significant person or not. And so some people end up feeling really lonely and some people end up feeling frustrated and some people are disappointed. I really don't think in February there's a lot of people who are super excited and super happy about Valentine's Day. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm a cynic.
Curmudgeon.
But this Christmas love is about something that's deeper and truer. It talks about a steadier, not just a feeling, but a reservoir of energy, almost. I had a seminary professor who always would talk about love as energy that moves throughout the world.
Mm.
And so I think Christmas, more so than Valentine's Day, gives us a chance to really kind of step into that energy and think about how that energy propels our lives forward and the choices that we make and who and how we share that energy with each other.
Yeah. Well, a couple of really important images that your words are evoking for me. You talk about Hallmark and the sentimental love or even the romantic love that I think we name sometimes over the course of our lives. And it strikes me that some of that stuff can be a little naive. It can be a little bit kind of surface level hopeful. It can imagine that things are always happy. But most folks who have been married for a long time or who have parented, or who have kind of lived a full life with all that life kind of throws at you, understand that love isn't always like that. And in fact, no Hallmark card would ever sell if it described what love is actually like. And that's exactly what God does at Christmas. God knowing human nature, God knowing what we as a human race have already done to one another, decides to send God's own self to us in the form of a baby with human skin. And, you know, there's that beautiful poem from Philippians about taking on, the nature of humankind, Christ becoming a servant to us all. And that would be miracle enough for God to choose to break into the world, to be human with all of the limitations, and risk involved in that. But God also does that knowing how the story is going to play out. Like knowing that Jesus' life is not going to be easy. And in fact, choosing difficult paths, choosing an unwed woman to impregnate, you know, choosing a man and choosing to use a dream to communicate with a man, choosing a path of godly resistance to worldly power.
Right.
And subjecting God's own self to death on a cross. I mean, I can't imagine a love that is more all-encompassing than that, any more mature, with any more integrity. There aren't even words to describe that kind of love. Yeah. But I am surprised I've never seen it on a card.
Maybe we should write one.
Maybe we should keep our day
jobs. Maybe we should, maybe not. That's true. Well, you know, I guess I was thinking about those situations and those experiences that have taught me a deeper kind of love. Mm. And I think that motherhood for me has brought more understanding to this idea that when God talks about a love that will not let you go, a love that remains no matter what,
mm-hmm.
I think it was looking at my son, right, and realizing that there was not going to be anything that I could imagine that would keep me from loving him.
Mm-hmm.
That it went beyond whatever his behavior was at a given moment, beyond whatever demands were being placed on me at a specific time.
Mm-hmm.
That really opened up a new way of me to understand this idea of love. Now, I've loved other people in my life, but I think this is the first time that I felt the responsibility of love,
mm-hmm.
the risk of love, and then the hope of love all in the same time, maybe.
Yeah. I love that, you know, being a parent myself and looking at my child, there's an awareness of what love can do for a child, for a human being. You know, we know that Absolutely. Children who are shown love have a greater capacity for love later on. And so even when I think about, like, as a parent, I don't want to pretend like I love my child because it's always what I want to do. Sometimes I have to say, like, you have this child. She is yours. You will love her.
I'm just saying, standing there at 4:30 in the afternoon trying to power through some homework is really just a test of all limits of love.
Yes, I agree. And then I think back on the experience of being mothered, mm-hmm. right? Or being fathered, having been parented. I think about all the terrible things I said to my parents. I didn't behave. I'm sure I behaved poorly in some instances, but I was more of a speaker, if that, you know, surprises anyone. And so when I wanted to really hurt, like when I was mad and I wanted to just put that knife in and turn it a little bit, I would use my words. And so I said some pretty terrible things to my parents. And there was, sure, there's risk involved in that as a child, but I always felt like I could be who I was, how I was, when I was, because they were going to love me anyway. And sometimes I got a big old spanking. And sometimes my mother made me read James from the back of the car on the way to youth group out loud to everyone who was in the car so I would learn the importance of taming the tongue. But, you know, I think the experience of being parented gives tremendous insight as to how we are to live in response to God's love for us.
Right.
Because yes, we are free to be who we are because God loves us unconditionally, but it doesn't stop there. We don't get to just receive the gift and put a period on our lives. We're called to put that love into practice. And not only with our own children, but in the same way that God does through Jesus, we are called to pour out that love without restriction, without boundary, without criteria. You know, we're just called to pour it out.
And I think that I always go to weddings now and I look at these young people standing up there and they're promising to love, 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 love. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you do not understand what it's going to be like when you really, really want to go to sleep at, you know, 4:45 and your person is over there snoring and you just want to punch them. or when they don't put the cap back on the toothpaste. And those are just the little daily grinds. But then there can also be some really other big disappointments, or there can be big life issues about health and wellness. And you're standing up there and you're saying you're going to do this for the long haul. And it is so hard to make that choice of love. And so I just have to give kudos to Joseph, who took a risk and said, yes, I will love.
Yeah. Yeah. Because to your point, most marriages don't start that way. And I think, again, we're being kind of anachronistic, imagining that Mary and Joseph fell in love and then, like, went through the steps that we do in 2019 in America.
Probably not so much.
Right. I mean, it was probably arranged and whatnot. But in any case, to begin a lifelong commitment and scandal and rumor and mistrust, you know, can you imagine what Joseph's mama was saying? You know, so it's hard. It's super hard. And I think even for us who are living in 2019, or who did choose our spouse and who did have that blessing of falling in love ahead of time and then making that commitment, and we may have had 5 years before the first thing went wrong. But the truth is, when you're committed to loving someone for the long haul, there will be days when you don't want to love them. There will be days when they look and seem unlovable. And I'm not even just talking about in marriage. I'm talking about in relationship as friends. I'm talking about as strangers. When you commit to a life lived in love, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to feel like it. But love is a practice of daily and every second self-emptying so that the other is always your priority.
But how do you get refilled? So if we're always pouring out, right?
Yeah.
Where is the point that we take in and receive and fill back up? Because I think if we aren't open to receiving that love from God and from other folks, even from ourselves, then we're not, there's no way that we're able to do that with other people.
Yeah. That's a really good question. You know, I have conflicting images in my mind about that. Sometimes I like to imagine that in the act of pouring out, somebody else is pouring out towards us.
Towards us.
Right. So we're being refilled, even if that somebody else is God.
But it takes attention to notice it.
Oh, for sure.
And then to understand it.
So even as I'm imagining kind of a circular flowy type dynamic where love is just running rampant, you know, in the world.
Love is all around.
Love is all around. Thank you. Best Christmas movie ever. You know, even though I like to imagine that and I have that mental image of, if I were going to draw you a map of like where love goes, that it would be very flowy. But there are times when we are empty and there is nothing else. And that old adage, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Like, there are times when you don't need to say anything at all because you're empty. There are days, you know, this is from being a colleague of mine, where I say, you know, I've held for the last 5 hours the pain of 5 different people in this world. It's a lot. I cannot make that phone call. Can you call that person? Because I just can't do it today. There's no more. And that to me is important to remember, because as we'd like to just empty, 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 only God can do that. And sometimes we have to recognize our human limitations and to make ourselves kind of participate in the rhythms and the practices that we know will rejuvenate us. And that's an exercise in trial and error, I think. You know, each of us have to find our own rhythms, our own go-to practices that kind of help us regroup and refocus so that we can be full.
I think also the importance of community.
Yeah.
We cannot do this by ourselves.
That's exactly right.
I cannot be a loving person all by myself. If you leave me to my own self, I get injured.
Yep.
I get hurt. My little feelings get trampled on. Mm-hmm. And so without a community that surrounds me and encourages me to be more loving, then I can get overwhelmed pretty quickly. So I have to have people around me. And I think that's why Jesus set up this idea of church, right? Because this journey of discipleship, this journey of following love, no matter where it takes us, is not something we can do all by ourselves.
That's exactly right.
And so that's why we all have to go to church. Greystone is a good church to go to.
Shameless plug. But yeah, I mean, in the same way that our marriages get hard, our friendships get hard, our lives get hard. And sometimes our go-to people are feeling the pain just like we are. And so we have to kind of broaden the net a little bit and have people who have been with us in ordinary time when things are fine, so that we can say, you know what, I need to lean on you a little bit. And when our lives are woven together, it's okay to lean, because there's going to be somebody who can hold you up on the other side.
Yeah. So we're inching a little closer to Christmas, and pretty soon we're going to be around tables and in parties and in spaces with folks, family members, who are watching television, who are looking at their social media streams, who are on different sides of any number of issues. And some of them feel really passionately about those things, and things can get heated and they can get really overboard sometimes over the Christmas ham. Do you have any advice or suggestions on how we grow and step deeper into love, even in those situations where we maybe want to pull our hair out?
Yeah. Well, first, I think to go into those events knowing that moment is going to happen is helpful. Because you're right. I mean, there are so many people with so many opinions about so many things. And somewhere along the way, we've all seemed to buy into this lie that our ideas and our opinions make us who we are. And so when somebody begins to challenge those, we feel personally threatened. So to go into each moment and each holiday meal and each ham situation, just expecting somebody to say something that's going to be different. That's going to make you feel a certain kind of way on the inside, and get yourself, this is what I do. I train myself to remember what Brené Brown says, which is people are hard to hate up close, move in. And so I try to remember that it's better to be curious than it is to be opinionated. It's better to ask questions than it is to state my thoughts in that situation. And so my way of choosing love at the holiday table, when somebody says something that I don't agree with, because I'm not very good at just passing it and moving on, so I'll lean in and say, that's interesting. Tell me how you arrived at that conclusion. And usually what I find is the people I love have had a respectable path to the conclusions that they have landed, you know, upon. And so I can love them more and I can understand where they're coming from. And they're not just like a talking head on the opposite news channel that I choose to watch at my house. And what I also have learned is that that helps me not be the talking head on the other side of the aisle, but instead it begins to build a bridge. And so I'm understanding the person in front of me. I'm seeing them as human. And in all things, I'm remembering this is a beloved child of God, whom God has already said, I love you. I accept you. You are welcome here. And so my job is simply to mirror that, to try to understand the person, to say, I love you. You're welcome here. Let's eat ham.
Okay. That's harder than it sounds, though.
It is.
I'm kind of terrified.
I know.
Of the cranberry sauce and the ham.
Well,
and
Jesus
all
died too. On a Roman cross. Like, you know, this was never going to be easy. Surely we can break so ham.
Love is so hard.
Well, maybe that's your, maybe it's just a matter of perspective. Jesus died on a Roman cross for God's love. All you have to do is eat ham.
I do love your perspective that says, this person is a child of God.
Yeah.
This person is beloved, and it's our job to mirror that. That's so important as we think not only about our dinner tables and those awkward conversations that might happen, but also as we kind of get broader into our world and our culture. Because it seems like there needs to be a fresh voice that comes in to build those bridges, to kind of cool things in a superheated environment. Although I don't know that love really does that, because I think love energizes. But there has to be something that helps us communicate with each other instead of debating or screaming at each other.
Well, I think if we land in a place where all we know is debate and scream, we need to regroup, walk away, and come back looking for a different, you know, the option is never either or. I'm reminded of Howard Thurman's third way. You know, when your back is up against the wall and it seems like there is no way, God is making a third way. And I think about the text from a few weeks back from the second week of Advent, when we were talking about John the Baptist, the call from the wilderness. God is usually providing a way of love. The question is, can we find it? And 9 times out of 10, it's coming from a source that we're not expecting.
I think Anne Lamott had a statement about that. The in all the fairy tales, your help is coming from the most least expected character possible.
Exactly.
Your help is always coming from some character on the fringe, and that's going to be your path forward.
Yeah. So if you can't eat ham with your family, go find somebody who doesn't look like your family and eat ham with them.
The friends.
Strategy number three.
Strategy number three. Well, as we think about growing into love, remembering that love is not just a superficial feeling, but an energy that runs throughout the world that is a sense of God's presence moving and acting and creating. I hope that we will all let that energy carry us forward into Christmas and even into 2020. And just as a heads up to all of y'all, in Greystone, we will be launching a kindness campaign in 2020, and we're really excited about that, thinking about ways that we can not be nice.
That's right.
We're not nice, but we are kind. And there's a difference, and we're going to be exploring that in the coming year. So I hope that you will tune back in a little bit later in 2020 and go on that journey with us as we try to understand about a bit more about kindness in our world, in our families, in our churches, everywhere, all around.
Exactly.
Thanks, Pastor Christy.
Thank you.
Let's close in a word of prayer. Holy and merciful God, may your love find us in dreams, in relationships, in starry nights, in the unexpected and the surprising. And as we have been found by love, help us to be love to other people. And we pray in the name of your Son. Amen.